Session number 9751, reel 6.
Mr. Frank Ray in Reel 6. We were talking about the nature of Bowman Hamill as a fighting area and the day-to-day nature of fighting. I'd like now to ask you about each part of that fighting. Was there much artillery fire directed on the front line at this time?
No, never. And one reason why we didn't fire our rifles, because you had to clean the rifle after you'd fired it, you see, so that if you kept it unfired, you didn't bother to clean it, perhaps for all the time you were in the trenches. You saw it was clean, and you might have got a zealous officer round sometimes, just say, let me have a look at your rifle, you see. And if it was mucky, you would have been on the peg. But normally, you had a cover over it, and you kept it clean.
You say that you never got artillery fire. Did you never get any shells?
Oh, yes.
At this time?
You'd probably be once or twice in the 5 days there might have been an odd shell about. But sometimes the biggest danger to us was our own artillery. I remember on several occasions.
During this quiet period? So
falling short, yes. There was a load of rubbish as well. You know, his shells were vastly superior to ours. In noise, anyhow. I mean, we were shelled one day, absolutely all day. Whether they got through to they kept talking about getting in touch with the artillery and telling them to lengthen the range. But they never did, and the damn shells were dropping about our trenches. But they were going off like paper bags, that was all.
Did you feel resentment about the gunners?
Oh, my God, yes. But we only thought that at the finish, the only way we'll be killed with those is a direct hit. Which, of course, was always possible. It was very unnerving and nasty.
How did you react to your first artillery fire from the Germans, in particular, well, from either side? I mean, the first time you ever got shells dropping near.
I was always frightened. But what annoyed me, I was a fighter by nature, always. If I could fight back, but when you had to grovel on the ground at the bottom and you could do nothing about it, that's where it hit you. We'll come to something later on about the best 2 days in my life in the army were the days when I could fire back, when I was firing back at them, and it was a fair fight. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. But being shelled and being able to do nothing about it, it's terrifying.
Did it affect your morale at all?
Well, I soon recovered, you know. So felt a bit flattened and a bit frightened and that sort of thing. That was all, but soon as it finished, you know.
Did you get used to occasional shelling?
Yes, yes.
What about mortars, mortar-fire, Minenwerfers? Did you have any of them at that time?
We had them the first time we went into the line. And as a matter of fact, the officers called them urinal canisters. We called them pistons. And I'll tell you what they were. They were biscuit tins, about a foot and a half by a foot. And they were filled full of a certain amount of gelignite and whatnot. And they had nails in them and any filter or anything they could put in them. And when they shot them up, you could see them whizzing in the air coming towards you. They would have a fuse on them, you see. And the thing was, you'd look up and see this, you'd think it was coming into your traverse, and you'd set off and run and probably run into somebody that was thinking it was coming into theirs and they were running into yours. And you used to get some nasty smacks with a tin hat, you know. If the fellows were different sizes, the brim of the tin hat could catch him across the face, or... And there was often a bit of bad language over that. And then the damn thing would probably go over the back, or... Very seldom did they drop one in the trenches, but they were all noise. Mostly noise. That's a bit unnerving. And probably the devils would send one over every half hour or every hour to keep you awake, you know. That's what we used to say. We can keep awake without them.
Even in the quiet sector, then, you had these?
Oh, yes, yes.
What about British mortar? Did they...
Well, we hadn't any at that time. We hadn't any till they got the Stokes guns, which were a vastly improved weapon.
What about, you'd be out of bombing, hand-bombing range. Did they have any rifle grenades, the Germans, at that time?
Never troubled us with them, but they would have them.
What about small arms fire? Now, you've talked about sniping, in one case where a friend was sniped whilst talking to you.
Yes.
Was sniping a big risk prior to the 1st of July? Or
no. It wasn't. If you had any common sense, you see, you didn't expose yourself. You didn't make a target of yourself if you kept down. They didn't snipe us, they couldn't see anything. Like, I never saw a German in the German lines in my life. Even when I was an observer, I never saw any life.
So it wasn't did you have British snipers at this time?
No, I don't think we would have. I think they would come later.
Was there a lot of machine gun fire during the day or at night?
No, just occasional bursts. I think they did it to clean the gun out or something.
What about... there was a big mine at Bowmont Hamel. Was there any sign of the mining operations going on?
Oh, we used to see the engineers going up at night.
That's when you're behind the lines, you saw them. Were they not digging near where you were in the line then?
They were at the right of us, really. I see, we've seen them coming up and going down, and that, of course, when I thought of their job, I thought, well, they've got a worse job than us, and I didn't think that possible.
Were you aware of the risk from German mines, or did you not?
Well, we didn't really think of it, but when we talking to these engineers, they used to go down our mine, and whenever there were mines, there were generally one on each side, and they were listening for the tapping on the other side, and it was a question of who blew who up first, you see. Yes.
But it didn't bother you much on the surface?
No.
How did during this first 3 months then, what effect did this daily routine and all the fighting and the lifestyle have on you? Did it cause any fatigue, for instance?
No.
What about stress? Did you have any cases in the company that you knew who were getting highly stressed?
No. I don't remember any.
So, no malingering of any sort at this stage?
I can't remember any of our fellas ever going on sick.
How did you get on with... We've talked a little about how you got on with the troops. How did you get on with them in the trenches? Would you have this one special friend, Broomhead?
Yes. Up to July. We were never separate, really.
Did you share a cubbyhole and such like?
We shared everything. We slept together for warmth out of the line. And... Well, I reckon if it hadn't been for me, he would have given his life away, because that rum business, he used to get excited and he would take the lot on, you see. You know, I said, the next time I see an exhibition like that, I'm going to stop that rum. and he calmed down a little bit.
Would everybody have a special friend that they shared things with?
No. No, but we were all friendly. We were all very friendly, always.
The NCOs, were you still on first-name terms with most of them, were you?
Oh, yes, they were just the same as us. Even the sergeants. Yes, there was no, we called them sergeant if anybody else was there. There was an officer there, but if the officer wasn't there, he was just Bill.
Was military discipline tighter or less tight in the front line?
Oh, there wasn't. There was very little discipline. You were all the same there.
So the front line was more informal than...
Oh, definitely.
Now, what about... You mentioned earlier that the officers never rarely came forward. So this would mean that, in your view, the NCOs ran the front line.
Definitely. That was if the... sometimes the company headquarters were in the front line, in which case the company commander would be there. But normally he was in the reserve trench, 50 yards or so behind. And who I saw mostly in the front line, there used to be always a parson used to come round frequently. Always had a chat with him. He was quite a nice
fellow. He was your battalion's parson, was he?
Battalion parson. He always came round every time we were in the line.
What would he talk to you about?
Well, it wasn't. He never talked about religion. I don't know what he talked about. But I also remember he was a nice young fellow. And I also remember saying to him, "By Jove, if I had your job, I wouldn't be here."
Did you? You never even saw the second lieutenant, then?
Oh, I would see them occasionally, but yes, I remember seeing one that had been one of our lads, and he came back to us. I remember talking to him and telling him he'd mismanaged it to come back there.
Now, did you think that the officers were living in superior conditions than that which the troops were? Because you mentioned gin swilling.
Definitely. Oh, yes. They had no night duties to do like us. There'd perhaps be one detailed off to walk round during the course of the night, and that's all you saw of them till stand two. I believe they did come round at stand two. But most of them, they were there in comfort, and they had the batman there with them, making them tea and one thing and another. Oh, they had nothing like we had.
Did you resent that at all, or did you take it as read?
I think we talked about it, and we took it as read, because they never were part and parcel of us.
But you said one officer in particular was very popular with it. Did that not affect it?
Oh, but he left us. He never came to the trenches. When we got to France from Egypt, he went on headquarters, divisional headquarters.
Staff.
As court-martial officer. You see, he was a barrister. I never saw him again.
Did you respect the new officers as much?
Oh, no, never. Never again. There was never anybody like him.
Can you talk a little about how you felt about the officers then?
Well, I had a cross-grained look on things often. And I remember once there was a party of us and we were digging. And this snotty-nosed one came, and he looked where I was, and he said, "I hadn't done much." And I didn't say anything. And he said, turned to the sergeant, and he said, "I thought these were all pitmen." And I turned around and I said, "I don't know about the others." I said, "I've never seen a bloody pit in my life." Well, he reported me for that, for which I received some CB or something. I mean, I couldn't really dig for my life. I mean, there was a pitman with us. And really, when we were detailed on a working party, you were generally given 6 feet long to dig and 6 feet down, with about 3 feet at the top. Jacket could dig his whack in about 2 hours, and then he used to come on, "Come out, you lazy little devil," as he would swear. And then he used to finish mine off and then go on and finish somebody else's off. He could dig like a machine. He was an ex-pitman. It was different altogether, but I mean, I couldn't dig for my life. I'd never dug anyhow in my life. I'd never had a stupid spade in my hand.
Well, you've come on there to working parties. You'd go on working parties. Would you go on working parties when you were at the rest place at Bus? Is that when you do that sort of thing?
Yes, that was worse, you see, because you perhaps had a parade or two during the day, and then at night you walked 3 miles up to the line, and perhaps half a mile up the horrible trenches, and you did your digging, and then you had to walk back again. So you were working a jolly of a sight harder when you were in the when you were out of the trenches than when you were in.
So you've mentioned this digging. What were you digging there? That would be a reserve line.
Reserve trenches and that sort of thing.
What else would you be put on digging?
Well, really nothing much else.
What other jobs would you be given when you were on working parties? I'm talking now when you were at Bus.
I can recollect anything other than digging or repairing. And
what repair? Repairing the trenches that have been.
Yes, if there's been any blown in or anything, you'd have to go and put them right.
So this hard physical labour tired you out more than the actual front line?
Yeah, it was far worse, yes.
Now we'd moved on to rest. You'd spend 4 or 5 days, 5 days in the front line. Mm-hmm. Would you spend some time in the support trenches?
Yeah, 4 or 5 days there, and then you were out for a bit.
Out back to Bus.
Back, yes, in an indefinite time, really. Might have been a fortnight or so.
So, and that's where you'd go during that fortnight. You'd be at Bus, would you?
Yes.
Where would your support lines be?
Well, there might have been 50 yards behind the front line. There might have been half a mile behind the front.
How did life in the support lines differ from life in the front line? Now, you said the front line had a cathedral atmosphere and was very different, but what else was different in the support lines during this time in front
of
us?
Well, you could talk, and the lads that wanted to could sit down and have a smoke in the bottom and that sort of thing, but did very little smoking in the front line ever.
Why was that? Could you just explain?
Well, they never stood up and smoked, you see. They might have sat down and cupped their hands or got under some corrugated iron to smoke, but
that was for fear of what?
The cigarette can be seen a long way at night, you know. The light of a cigarette.
Even though the actual cigarette couldn't be seen, it would leave a glow, would it? Above the...
No, it wouldn't. You had to see the cigarette. For instance, a man on duty on the fire step couldn't smoke under any circumstances.
So what would you be doing in support? How did your daily routine differ? Would you be on working parties there as well?
Mostly, yes. Standby. Yeah.
Was the routine largely the same, with the exception of more working parties?
Mostly the same, yes.
When you're in rest...
Dreary and monotonous. And waste of time, a little bit.
What, the support line?
Aye.
Did you prefer it to being in the front line, or...?
Oh, yes. Oh, there was always that aura in the front line, that you were first. if anything happened, you were for it.
When you were at Bus, what was your accommodation like there?
We were in Nissen huts. Yes. Oh, it wasn't too bad. Except most of my recollection is the weather was so terrible. It was so much wet.
Did you go back to kit inspections and having to polish your buttons and spit and polish?
Oh, yes. Under that game, as soon as you came out, that was to keep up morale, you know. Yes.
Now, you said you're a man of independent mind at the time. How did you feel about that?
Oh, well, I was only a boy, you know. But I often opened my mouth when I shouldn't have done.
Even at this early stage?
Yes.
What sort of things would you say?
Well, I generally said them when I shouldn't have said them, and in the hearing, I'll come to it shortly, what happened.
Okay, right, well, I'll, yes, I'm pushing you when you don't really want. Would you get more, would you get any rest at all when you were at so-called rest camp at Bus? Or was it all working parties and parades?
No, you weren't up every night. You'll be out about one night in three. What? And there were staminas there. I know that was the first time I ever got tight. I
could you tell me about that?
Yes. Went out with Broomhead one night and we went to an estamina inn. We had a bottle of champagne each, was 5 francs each. And I'd never had a drink in my life of anything. And I was as drunk as a noodle. And we got back to the billet, and I remember it was very wet, and we had capes then. And I remember tripping up this cape, tripping up some steps on the way to the camp, and being as sick as a dog. And that was my first initiation into drink. And that same night, this corporal that I was telling you about was a twit. Broomhead had said something to him, and he was at the other side of the hut. And he came lumbering over. He was like a bear. He was going to wring Broomhead's neck. And I stood up. I said, "Get yourself back, Wally." I said, I'll fettle you. Touch him. And somebody tripped him up. And I also remember him that threw the wet capes on top of him till he was underneath a mound of wet capes. That was the end of Wally's aggression. Yes.
What was this estaminet like? Can you remember anything about it?
Well, no. The beer was a penny a glass. And I don't tell you what it was called. And they used to go and we used to have sing songs, you know.
Would there be a lot of drunkenness?
No. Oh, we hadn't any money. Do you know, in my nearly 5 years in the army, my total income was about £100.
So how often would you get to an estaminet when you were on rest at Bus?
Oh, we'd go every night. Yes, you went for the company of sing songs and...
Did they serve food?
No. No. If, if you had any money, no, you never got any food, they never had anything. In fact, they'd have given their souls for a tin of bully beef. But we used to go into these kitchens, farmers' kitchens, and they had a big stove, and we used to have cognac and coffee, and I think it was fourpence. And it was lovely, I liked that.
How did you get on with the local civilians, the French?
We never had any trouble. They weren't very nice and they didn't like us, but...
Why weren't they very nice?
Well, of course, they resented us and blamed us for everything that happened to their army. They were getting socked at Verdun and we weren't doing enough and...
Did it lead to any tension between all...
No, I never saw any tension.
Did the troops, did they have any opportunity to meet women, or was that...
I never spoke to a female in France until about 1918, I should think, when we went to Bethune. That were the first females I ever saw in France.
Did that bother you at all?
Listen, you're not going to believe it, but when I hear about all this sex business today, I never heard a voice in the army an hour lot about women. There was never any mucky jokes. There was never any reference to them. We never saw them and we never thought about them. And you might think that unbelievable, but I only remember one lad in our lot. He went off and he got himself a doze. But he was a bit low-class fellow from South Shields. And there was hell on about it, of course, that he had to go and... That was at Bethune. He had to go and tell where this lass was, and he vanished. They took him out. He never came back to us.
So it really wasn't an issue at all?
It wasn't an issue. It was... I can't ever understand it. You see, there was any like me, you see, before the war, I never thought about anything but really football, and it was all we hadn't had any money. I had 2 bob a week pocket money before the war, and I joined the army, and I got 7 bob a week pocket money, made a learned that what to call it, that if I allowed mother half my wages, in the event of me being killed, she would get a pension. But if not, she wouldn't. You see, there were a lot of people in our lot, a lot of school teachers. Now, I was just thinking, in our section of 16, there were 3 school teachers, 3 chemists, there was a builder, there were 3 clerks, there was a tram driver, and that's about the sort of fellows were. Now then, in the next section to us, there were 2 rotten snobs who went off and got commissions. There was a fancy engineer, not an ordinary engineer, but he went off. There was a chap going to be a doctor, he went off. There was a sub-editor in the paper. There was a manager of a theatre. There was a traveller. There was a fellow that had a wholesale grocer's. And there were people like that, you see. Now then, there was also a good proportion of teachers. And they were really a very fine lot of fellas.
Now, as we've been discussing this period...
There were no dirty stories or anything.
Leading up to the Battle of the Somme.
Yes.
Now, did you have any training or preparation for that battle at all during this period?
Nothing extra. Just what we were told, as a whole little heap of rubbish.
What were you told? Can you remember?
Oh, yes. We were told that there was going to be this bombardment that would knock hell out of the Germans, and all we had to do was get up and walk across. And we only had to walk. On no account had we to stop for anything. And it just walked straight through to Berlin. And there wasn't... It wasn't one of us in our battalion that ever got to the German lines. Because we hadn't any prisoners taken. None of our fellows became prisoners, everybody. You couldn't. It was absolutely impossible. You see what happened, the jokers, they never learnt. The Germans had these deep dugouts, they were as safe as the bank. They were 30 feet down.
But did you not have any practice against marked out lines or such like behind the lines?
No. I can't recollect any.
And were you given any detailed instructions about what objectives you had and what you were supposed to do when you got to the front line, German front line and such like?
Just take them and go on till you were stopped. That was all I remember.
Right. What do you remember of the bombardment before?
Just a hell of a row for 5 days, night and day. It went on ceaselessly for 5 days, and I don't think they did a heap of the damage.
What was the noise like? What characteristics did it have?
Well, there were hundreds of guns going all the time. I mean, it didn't affect us. We just took no notice of it.
Where were you during the bombardment?
At this place, Bus.
You were in rest camp then?
Yes.
Were you confident in it? At the time?
Well, we were saying to ourselves, God, they're giving him some stick, you know. That sort of thing. But, of course, we hadn't been knowing that we weren't doing a heap of good except kicking up a row.
Were you nervous about were you nervous about the prospects of going into attack?
No. No, it didn't get through, I don't think.
Was it stopped by the... Were you just so confident? Or what was it?
Well, we were like a lot of lambs, sheep. We did as we were told, and we didn't think.